Right, today's obviously our last learning session, which I can't believe is sort of upon us so quickly. Where this semester went, I really do not know. What I want to do today is a piece of analysis on the Pelegesh Begiva. If you can just get these out. I know there's a lot of girls are not going to be here because of Sysim and something. I just want to take these are double-sided pages. part of the photocopy didn't come out very well, so I apologize about that. But we'll try our best to get through this. Again, very quickly, the story of Pelegesh Begiva is really one of the most distressing, difficult stories in the whole of Tanakh. It's a... Thank you. I'm doing this past the moment. It looks very specific, but in a way it's very generic. You know, there's no names. If you notice that the people involved are not mentioned by name, they're just mentioned by tribe. So obviously the focus of this particular story is much more tribal than it is personal, if you understand what I mean. Okay, it's a tribal problem which reflects a much more serious problem amongst the Jewish people. I mentioned to you on Tuesday that the Ramban, in his comments on the story of Sodom in Bereshit, also has a very long piece about Pelegesh Begiva, and he's comparing the two stories. And what the Ramban does, and a lot of it's on the page in front of you, the Ramban tries to mitigate, that means to lessen the effect of the story of Pelegesh Begiva, what we in our sefer, and say that it wasn't as bad, if that's the way to put it, as the story of Sodom. The story of Sodom, we all know what happened to the angels and that they eventually destroyed the city. Lot was saved, but everyone else was killed. And in this story, obviously, it's not a destruction of any city, but it's clearly a destruction eventually of a tribe. What we call collective responsibility. Collective responsibility is the idea that if you see something happening and you don't stop it, then you become collectively responsible for what took place. So in this case, the tribe of Binyamin should have known that these ruffians, remember the story, that they wanted to have relations with the men, and eventually they threw out the woman instead, and they abused her the whole night. And she was laying, she was on the doorstep, and she died. And as a result, remember that the body was cut up, and parts were sent all around Israel to make a statement. And the statement was that we are in big trouble. We are 12 tribes, we're like 12 parts of a body, but there's no unity in that body whatsoever. Everyone is only interested in their little, as you say in Hebrew, Dalad Amot. In their own little area, shetach. But nobody is interested in worrying about other people from different tribes. And of course, this eventually became scandalous to the point where the Jewish people ganged up against Binyamin in order to punish them. And one of the questions, remember, we raised is that, if you remember the story, there were three battles. The first two battles, we were told that the Benjaminites, the people of Binyamin, won. They actually won the battle, and men of Israel, the combined army of the other tribes, that I think it was nearly 40,000 of them, were killed. So this is again a serious question. Why did the first two battles actually go against the men of Israel, who seemingly were doing what we're going to describe as a correct thing? They were punishing Binyamin for doing a terrible thing. So why did Binyamin win? That was question number one. And question number two, which I think we need to deal with, is really the whole issue of the sin. Do we see this as something as bad, if not worse, than Sodom? Or in fact, can we say that there are differences which in fact mitigate, make it a bit less than Sodom, which I suppose for the purposes of analysis will make us feel a bit better? I know that we were going down and down and down, but to suggest we got to that level of gross behavior that you know, en masse, that the whole of the Jewish people were like that. No, that's something that is not acceptable. So what we're going to do, if you look at the page in front of you, you've got two sides, A and B. And we're going to look at section A. And this is really the section which is also, for those who have the red book or the pink book, it's in the back of the pink book in English, the commentary of the Ramban and what he says. And it's kind of interesting because, again, you may very well feel that the Ramban is trying to, I don't know what word I'm going to use, but let's use the word whitewash. He's trying to mitigate, he's trying to find excuses for the men of Binyamin, which, you know, you may or may not feel comfortable with. So let's have a look at this and we'll see how we go. We'll see how long my voice lasts. Section A. Hadimiyot. Oh, this is taken, by the way, from a sefer that we used right at the beginning of the semester called Derech Bina. I haven't used it at all during the semester because I was really attached to Rav Levi, and it's a much more user-friendly sefer what we have been using. But this conclusion of Pilegesh Begiva I found very useful. So as a kind of end of semester piece, I've gone back to this rabbi. His name is Rav Shoshana. He lives in Cleveland. I think he's still around, I'm pretty sure. If any of you come from Cleveland, Ohio, connected to the Tells Yeshiva, you may actually be able to look him up. He may actually still be around there. I don't know. And his sefer is an interesting sefer. And this I think, is a pretty useful conclusion. The only problem with the photocopy is there's a bit of a line down the middle. Some of the words got obliterated. So please bear with me as we go along. Section A. Hadimayon. Bein parashat Pilegesh Begiva bein Maaseh Sedom. So we're obviously reminded, as when we went through it on Tuesday, that this story of Pilegesh Begiva reminds us of Sedom. Hamatu'ar b'sefer Bereshit, Perek Yutad, which is in Bereshit chapter 19. Bolet la'ayin, it stands out. And im kol ha'sipur shelanu, mezazeh yoter b'totzotav ha'chamurot. And in a way, our story has got more serious conclusions because many more people, Jewish people, were killed. The story of Sodom is the destruction of a pagan city. In our case, we're talking about thousands of Jews fighting a civil war, which eventually led to many, many people being killed. So he says, Yesh kan dimion, third line, be'etzem itrachashut ha'masim, and the stories seem to be comparable. But dimayon b'shibushei lashon miyuchadim, and certain use of language is very similar between the two. And this is obviously why Shmuel, when he wrote the story Pilegesh Begiva in Sefer Shoftim, he used the language to remind everybody of the story of Sodom. It wasn't done by chance, right? He's obviously got a reason for using that language because it's a reminder. We should never ever get to this stage ever again. Fourth line, the middle. Kedei lo re banu edrachashei ha slida lemaaseh anshei giva, to make sure we never slide into the actions of these people ever again, because it's so similar to the story of Sodom. In other words, it's a warning. Shmuel HaNavi ends the book of Shoftim with a warning. And the warning is, for goodness sake, don't allow the society in Israel to become so self-centered that we are open to this type of disgraceful behavior, which can result. If people only care about their particular tribe or their particular family, but don't care about anybody else, it eventually leads to not just caring about your own, but rejecting others. Rejection really, in this case, became abuse and attack. And this is something which is unacceptable. As I said on Tuesday, the issue of chesed. Chesed is one of the big, big sort of between the lines issues of Sefer Shoftim. The chesed which was missing. And as I explained a few weeks ago, that's the book of Ruth. The book of Ruth, which in the Christian Bible, for instance, is attached to the book of Shoftim. We don't do it like that, but it's obviously around the same time. The book of Ruth is an antidote. The book of Ruth is about chesed. It's about chesed even from a woman who does not come from the Jewish world. But she became Jewish. She converted and unbelievable chesed that she does. She worries about Naomi and she worries about about the Boaz, and you know, the whole way that she conducts herself is an absolute lesson in kindness. And a lot of the rabbis talk about that, the idea that the Book of Ruth really is the opposite of everything we see, certainly in the public arena, in the Book of Shoftim. And as I said, really it's like Refuah and the Makkah. Shoftim is the Makkah, is the problem, and the Book of Ruth becomes the Refuah. Something to think about. We're coming up to Shavuot, and there's a lot of interesting things to say about the Book of Ruth, apart from the obvious connection to King David. Alright, there's the obvious connection that is written because of the proving who King David was, and that's a whole discussion by itself, but there's more to say about it. And the Book of Ruth is really one of the most wonderful, it's a non-event story, but it's an incredible sort of message, it really is. Go down to the next underlining. Lahalan hashva'a bein perek yutet ubein breshit yutet. It's interesting, they're both chapter 19. Breshit Yutet is the story of Sodom, and Shoftim, chapter 19, is the story of Pelegesh Begiva. They're both Yutet. And what he does is that he just compares, if you go across the line from one pasuk to the other, the language that is being used. So let's have a look at Aleph on one side, and Yudalad on the other side. Aleph v'yavoshne amalachim Sodom ba'eret. The two messengers came to Sodom after leaving Avram Avinu. The Lot Yashab Bishar Sodom, Lot was sitting in the gate. The Yar Lot Vayokam Nikratam, Vayishtachu Apayim, and they saw Lot and they bowed down to him. And look at Shoftim, a similar description. Atavolem Hashemesh, Eitzel Agiva, Shele Binyamin. This was also happening towards the evening. So the scenario is very similar in terms of the time of day. Alright? And if you just go down, let's look at, for instance, Vav. On the right hand side, we had say aleim Lot a petrad. Lot went out to the door, va'adelet sagar charav, and va'yomer al no achay toreu. Don't do this bad thing. Chaf gimel. If on the other side from Shoftim, from our story, we had say aleim ha'ish balabayit. Similar language. The man went out. Remember this old guy who took in the guests. Va'yomer aleim. Almost the same words. Al achai al tareuna. My brothers, do not do this evil thing. Acharei shebaish hazel beiti. This man has come to my house. Al ta'asud nevala. So do not do this evil thing that you're planning to do to molest him. And eventually, of course, they decide, well, we can't have him. At least we'll have the Pelegesh instead. And, of course, that leads to her death. And what Rav Shoshana does here very beautifully is that he shows you the parallel between the two stories. There's a very strong parallel, not only in the theme, but also in the language. Alright? I want that to be absolutely clear. Now if you go down under the broken line, Shitata Ramban, this is the first opinion, as we said, the opinion of the Ramban. And we'll go through a little bit of this, and you'll see what the Ramban says. Baram, so far, what we've said is that the two sins seem to be very comparable. HaRamban bePerusho leTorah, Parsha Vayera, the Ramban in Parsha Vayera, Peret Yutet, Pasachet, Hishtadel leMa'et, leMa'et, the word Ma'at, he tries to reduce. B'chomem Ma'aseh Nevala B'Giva, what the story in Shoftim is talking about, he tries to make it less severe. V'hera, Al Hevdelim Mahutiyim Bein Chatat Sodom Bein Chatatam. And he shows that there's big differences between the sin of Sodom and the sin of the men of Giva. What's an obvious difference between the two? In Sodom, was this what sort of participation level are we talking about? Just to get you thinking about this for a second. What sort of level of participation in Sodom Do we understand in terms of all of the immorality that was going on? Was it one person? Was it two people? Who was doing it?
Everybody.
Kula. What was happening in Giva?
Everyone did it also.
It doesn't say so. It says, Anshei Beliha. Everybody stood by and didn't do anything about it. And that's, of course, the big question. You know, you're walking in the street and somebody is not molesting, God forbid, whatever it may be, somebody is mugging somebody. What do you do? Do you get involved or you just stand off? You don't get involved. So the police will tell you, call the police. Because, you know, so they may be armed and you may get involved and you may end up getting injured, may get killed, God forbid. It's always a question, by not getting involved, are you actually condoning what's going on or not? So the suggestion is that maybe the story of Saddam is more serious because it wasn't just people standing by, but everybody, seemingly from the oldest to the youngest, were involved in this evil behavior. In Giva, says the Ramban, not so much. All right, I'm not sure if that's so convincing, but anyway, yeah.
Did they believe it was wrong, the people that were watching it in Giva?
Yeah, that's the point. You know, the Ramban tries to make it lema'et.
So I actually think it's worse.
Yeah, I agree. And you'll see that the whole thing that the Ramban tries to do, you say in Hebrew, yatsa scharo efsedo. Yeah, that means that he tries to gain and he ends up losing. All right, plus becomes minus. And you'll see what I mean in a second. Listen to this. It's the last paragraph on the right-hand side. Rabbeinu hits matzbiya al shoni sheish ben etnagutam shan shesedom ben etnagutam shan shegiva. Ramban points out the difference of behavior between the two stories. Aleph. An shesedom hayu mitalalim ba'orchim hanigrim li'iram b'matara lahani avrei derech melevakesh machaseh b'iram. Orech. In other words, people who are coming. What he's saying is that the purpose in Saddam was to stop people coming to the city. They did not want to share all of their good fortune with strangers. Alright? Saddam was a very, very wealthy place. And they did not want people to come and take away from their wealth. So that's why they behaved so badly towards strangers. Ke'ilu anshei Giva, but he says in this story of Binyamin, lo hit konanu. Lechalot regel mimkamam. This was not to stop people coming there. Elashtufezimahoy. They just were very immoral, right? People. They just indulged in immorality. And they wanted to have relations with the man. They were into homosexuality. You know, we're living in a society today which is not far removed from this. You can't say a word against the sort of the so-called gay community around us because as soon as you say something, you get criticized. Immediately, all right? Because that's the world that we live in, which in the one hand is good because we're sensitive to a part of the population that we need to be sensitive to, but certainly not to give carte blanche to say that this is a lifestyle which we approve of, no. And certainly from a religious point of view, we can't approve it. But you always find, as soon as somebody speaks up against it, wham, he's on the front page of the newspaper and he's accused of being homophobic and all the rest of it, all right? But that's the world we live in. And you know something? It's not far from what we're talking about here. Here again, the men of Binyamin were certainly not interested in keeping people away. They just wanted to indulge their desires. They wanted to indulge their homosexual tendencies. That's what they wanted to do. And that's why he says it's different to the story of Saddam. Saddam was about keeping people away. Binyamin was about indulgence. So he says it's two different types of story. Again, don't know what you want to think about that, whether you think that makes Saddam worse or makes Binyamin worse. I really don't know. To me, actually, it makes Binyamin worse because they are clearly corrupt. All right, Saddam are protecting, let's say, their wealth. That's also corrupt, but it's a different sort of corruption. With Binyamin, you would expect more care for the person, the stranger, who's coming into your cities. And all they want to do when the person comes in is have their way with them. They want to indulge in forbidden relations. So it's one of those things which is interesting. Let's just go to the column on the left hand side, top line, end of the line, Gimel. Mina bechinai chatit. The Ramban. This is one of the most difficult things that he says. The woman who was abused. What was her status? Was she absolutely 100% married woman in traditional sense to her husband? What did we call her? Remember the title that we used? Sorry?
Concubine.
And the suggestion is that it could be that she did not have a married status whatsoever. In the case of Saddam, all right, The Sodomites, the people living there, didn't care whether the people were married or not. They would abuse anybody. In the story here, the Ramban wants to argue, because she's not fully defined as a married woman, the sin against her is not so severe. Again, I was interested to see any reactions to that. She's not married, so therefore, you know what? It's not so terrible what they did to her. Can you really stomach such an argument like that? Because I can't, I'll be very honest with you. I'm quite shocked that you can even suggest such a thing. Yeah. Yeah, it's murdering her, for goodness sake. It's the most unbelievable thing. He's so desperate to find Zuchut for Klal Yisrael, I appreciate that. But to go to the point to say, well, you know what, it wasn't so bad because she's only a Pelegesh, and she'd already committed adultery anyway, so, you know what, Nishkefer, not as bad as it could have been. I'm sorry, I find that very hard, and you'll see the other before she can find it hard as well, yeah. Absolutely, absolutely.
So it's not like necessarily he agrees with their actions or is trying to justify.
He's just saying halachically. Correct. You're absolutely correct. But again, halacha's got to reflect the kind of reality as well. You know, the only thing I can compare it to today, which is this awful, awful situation, I don't want to go into it too, just to make the comparison, so what I'm going to say is the problem that in certain yeshivot, which happened in the last number of years, after it was found to be rife in the Catholic community, the problem of child abuse in schools, and all of a sudden, you know, the yeshiva, for years it was going on, in certain yeshiva, particularly in Brooklyn, it's come to light in many of the institutions, Satmar and various other Hasidic institutions as well. And the reality is that this is something that people brushed under the carpet by saying, Nishkefer, not so bad. And you know something? It is bad. Not only is it bad, it's disgraceful, it's disgusting, it should never have been allowed. And if you brush it under the carpet, you're one of the rabbis who said that we're not going to do anything about it, you're probably more guilty and gullible and everything else and liable for what was going on than the person who carried out the abuse. And this has now, thank God, come to a head, and people are just talking about it and doing something. These guys are getting prosecuted. Finally. Guy in Brooklyn, 30 years he was doing this stuff, and eventually got found out and now sitting in jail. About time too. And it should have happened 30 years ago. And it just makes my blood boil when I read this story. Because it's the same, it's the same kind of thing. In other words, you can justify and say, halachically, it's only rumors, and we don't go to the police because, you know, we don't do that as a community. And you know something? It's wrong. In this day and age, you can't allow, because the victim does not have a voice. And when the victim doesn't have a voice, that is a... not just a disgrace, it's wrong, it's absolutely wrong. Shani.
I don't think that he's necessarily justifying what happened by saying that it's not so bad, but I think he's saying that if she had been married, and if she had a husband, and if she had children, then
it'd be a lot worse. True, correct. It's always that argument, it could have been worse.
Right.
Right? You know, it's very delicate, this whole thing. And I just, he's working so hard to try and find the kind of merit, or to to take the sting out of some of the story, and by doing that, sometimes it's putting more sting into it,
yeah.
And that's what's worrying me. I'll just show you this. Look at this underlining, the third line of that paragraph. Ha-pilegesh lo hayta eshedish. This pilegesh was not a married woman. Technically, she wasn't completely married, as they say. Shekein ledato himiuchede lishuv lo lekidushin. Because you know that the whole idea of pilegesh is that there's no chuppah and kiddushin. So technically, she hasn't married according to Jewish law. He says she's already committed adultery. So you can argue halachically that the men who abused her were not liable for death from the Torah. You can only blame them for abusing this woman who is an adulterous concubine. But excuse me, that's, you know, as if to say that's okay. No, I'm sorry. You know, it's a very difficult argument. Even if halachically you will argue that it was less of a sin, but it's still a terrible sin. And they left her, you know, and she's on the doorstep and she dies of exposure overnight. You know, they didn't even sort of make sure. Whatever, they just left her in the street. very hard to justify that they were, you know, doing a lesser act. If anything, it was probably worse. Go to the next paragraph. Imke, lama chardu shitei Yisrael koka. So the Ramban says, if, according to the way I've explained it, I've mitigated it to the point which I've arrived at, why were the rest of the tribes so upset? Lama zikut kol ha'am le'mitzvah. Why did they call all the tribes to mitzvah? For yotzu le'milchama, akuva midam b'binyamin. In other words, then they started a civil war against Binyamin. Al she'eno, yaseh et chotcha, because Binyamin was not punishing those sinners. Al zeh mishiv Rambam b'bnei anshei Bliyal, shu misarei ha'yev takiver, b'kshu levatzeh maseh nevalach hamur, shu maseh sedom misham shelo duma. So basically he says, look, they had to be punished. Because they in the end of the day, they did a terrible deed. But to say that this is as bad as Sodom, says the Ramban, no. So if that's the case, according to the way that he explained it, we've got one or two questions to tie up still, yeah.
Okay, are we supposed to understand the story as an isolated event? This is only time that the tribe did this, or yeah.
One of the great questions. In other words, surely not. It's generic. It has to be. It's a symptom of the society. And maybe, thank God, this actual type of attack didn't happen very often. But as a symptom of what was going on amongst the Jewish people, yeah, it's a bad sign. And the reality is that the Ramban is trying to marginalize it. And, you know, with all due respect to him, the reality is that the way it's presented is pretty, pretty extreme as a kind of ill, you know, went right through the whole of society. As like we have today, you know, there's certain things which have become acceptable in society we live in, which 50 years ago was never acceptable, right? And nobody can speak up against it anymore. You can't say anything. You become a religious fanatic if you actually say something against, what's going on in the world around us. In England, the chief rabbi, not Sachs, the present one, the previous one, was very admired by Margaret Thatcher. If you've seen the movie that just came out, they don't mention him, but she really, it's one of the people that she really admired because he didn't care. He made statements about, for instance, about the whole gay issue, and he made statements about unemployment, and he made statements about people who spend their whole lives, you know, permanently unemployed without helping themselves. He made some very strong statements from a religious perspective, and he was very unpopular. The press used to criticize him, but it was a strong statement. It was a very, you know, it was based on traditions which he believed would be something that he had to express. So you see what I'm saying? You know, it's one of those things that it's got to go right through the society. I don't believe it's isolated. So I think your point is a good point.
Well, when the Ramban is making the comparison, it makes it sound like this one incident compared to all the things that Sodom did.
And to me, it's just so obvious that this is brought at the end of the Sefer as a kind of warning that, you know what, the society, they didn't control idolatry, Pesel Micha, and they didn't control immorality, Belegesh Begiva. And therefore, the extreme was Belegesh Begiva, but who knows how many women were abused and how many men, you know, there's male rape as well, how much of that was going on, and nothing was being done, nothing was being checked, nothing was being stopped. I bring the Ramban because it's interesting the way he tries to deal with this, but I'm not convinced. What he does try to answer for us, by the way, which I think works whichever way you look at it, is the big question of why in the three battles that took place, two of the battles Binyamin won. If Binyamin is allowing this to take place, this bad behavior, then surely Binyamin should have lost the first battle. That would have been it. Why did Binyamin win? So this is section Dalad. You'll see on the left hand side, the second from last paragraph. He says like this: Shnei tzadim hayu ro'im eifo le'onesh. It turns out, he says, that in fact both sides were liable in this case. Why? Binyamin ishia badishuto lemasei nevala. Binyamin was adish. Adish is a wonderful word in modern Hebrew, which means indifferent. They didn't care. Ubnei Yisrael chatu. Why did the rest of the Jewish people sin? But seitam lemilchemet achim shelo kedin, because they declared a civil war illegally. It was not a legal declaration at this time to declare civil war. It's very interesting. ki hagede atzmo shel al shivtei binyamin al shevi binyamin hayam utal asoto velo aleim. In other words, it wasn't for the Jewish people to decide that they were going to collectively punish Binyamin. It really was not the way to go. And it turned out that even though they asked the Urim V'Tumim, they did not ask the right question. They assumed that they would go to war. All they wanted to know for the Urim V'Tumim is when and how. But they didn't ask, should they in the first place? They already made that decision. So it turned out that their attack on Binyamin was not correct. It should have been done in a very different way. Maybe Binyamin should have been brought to Sanhedrin or something like that, and the people should be killed. But for the whole of the Jewish people to gang up against Binyamin, no. And that's why the rest of the Jewish people suffered two defeats, because they themselves had made a decision to go and fight Binyamin, which may not have been correct. The third war, which Binyamin lost, is only because it says, you'll see in the Pesukim in chapter 20, we didn't read it together, but I mentioned it on Tuesday, you'll see that there the Bnei Yisrael did tshuva. They realized that the two battles they lost was because they maybe had gone and done this war without the proper preparation. So they fasted and they davened, and then they went to battle, and of course at that point the balance changed, and Binyamin was almost decimated to zero. They were wiped out almost to nothing, and the rest of the tribes won. But it took a long time before both sides got kind of even out between the two sides. If you turn over to the other side of the page, I just want to show you something here very, very interesting. Just a second. Yeah, the second, it's number two on the page, it's the Sefer Akedat Yitzchak. Akedat Yitzchak is one of the great medieval commentaries written by somebody called Rabbi Yitzchak Arama. Rabbi Yitzchak Arama was a contemporary, I think he was after the Ramban, but around the same time period, around the 1300s. And he wrote this amazing Sefer, which is not well known, called Akedat Yitzchak, which is not about the Akedas, but it's on the whole Torah. And this paragraph which you have indented, after that paragraph, Rav Shoshana explains, "Bisadom," if you're with us, about halfway down on the right hand side, "Bisadom idnagu atoshavim klape azarim b'chzariyut." We know that Saddam behaved cruelly towards guests, "Bahatamam le'ayim chukei medina," and of course in Saddam it became the law of the land to behave in that way. "Shekein haita lahem Hashchata lechuka." Basically, they said that their laws were corrupt. "Ve'ilu v'givat Binyamin pa'alu achotim b'zadon libam v'al dat atzmam." In Pilegesh v'givah, they were not following any laws. They were following their own wild behavior. It wasn't legalized attack. "V'anshei ro'eh v'anshei ha'shevet ha'yu achrayim l'maseihem." And therefore the tribe was responsible for the deeds of these very uncontrollable individuals, "shenasu b'farhesi," which were done in public, "umishum shelo emidu et avaryanim ledin," and because they didn't bring these sinners to trial, "hutlach rayut maseim al kol ha'shvatim," the whole responsibility, says the Keri Yitzchak, fell on everybody, the whole Jewish people, "kedin pirtza musarit b'chevra," it's like a moral problem in society. So basically what the Akedat Yitzchak is arguing is that the difference between Saddam and Binyamin, Plegesh Begivah, is that Saddam, it was legalized attack, legalized wild behavior, whereas in Binyamin it was random, certainly not legalized, it wasn't according to their laws. So the argument, he says, is that Saddam was worse because Saddam had made it legal to attack and molest any guest that came into Saddam. In the story of Binyamin, Plegesh Begivah, it was not an attack which was legal, But it was an attack because the people were not controllable. And because everybody allowed them to do this, and this answers Ariella's question, clearly it happened not just once, but many, many times, and it was never stopped. It became a cause for worry, became a cause for controversy, and eventually the whole of the Jewish people were considered, not just Binyamin, he says, but everybody was considered responsible because they didn't stop these wild men of Binyamin behaving the way they were. So Akedat Yitzchak has got a slightly different twist on why Saddam was worse, and his basic point is, Saddam is worse because it became legalized. Alright, this is one of the big issues today. I can't help but make comparisons. Why, with all due respect, if two men want to get married, all well and good, you know, it's not going to affect, you know, sort of the world around us that much. But the problem that most people have with this idea of single-sex marriage is the fact that it becomes legal. Once it gets legalized within society, then we are opening ourselves to an extension of a legal definition which can become, not say it does, but it can become very problematic. Where do you draw the line? If you are not now taking a kind of religious point of view about this type of subject, but allowing it to be decided by secular legal definitions, then all of a sudden things become much more difficult to control. They can go out of control. Look what happened with Noah and that story, where again it was legalized that people could steal from each other. Eventually became, the society fell apart. And the worry is today that with legalized marriage like this, again, it's a reflection on society falling apart. The family unit is under attack, if it still exists. For many people, it doesn't anymore. It's very difficult. So, you know, the comparison between the world we live in today and some of the issues that we're learning here, I think is very interesting and kind of relevant. Yeah, Shannon.
A
church and state, yeah. You see, that's where we get into a difficult problem. Because we're living in a country which absolutely is built on that particular principle.
Right.
And nevertheless, we have to live in a kind of grey zone because our marriages are religious marriages.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we have to have a secular recognition of our marriage, but our marriages are religious. So the separation of church and state becomes a problem in the area of marriage, conducting marriages, etc. So it's this is a subject I don't want to go into, because this is for, you know, when you're in law school and you're in your class dealing with the Constitution, that's when you bring up that type of question and see what the professor says. Because most professors, if they're coming from sort of a liberal, that type of background, they'll find your question very, very unacceptable question. From my point of view, your question is a great question, because I'm looking at it from a religious perspective and saying that is a very big challenge in this particular society which we live here, where religion and state is really kept separate. I come from England, where religion and state is bound up, literally hand in hand. So I never had the conflict, I never had the problem. All right? To me, when I did marriages in my shul, I was both the secretary for marriages for the religious side and for the secular side all at the same time. And they had no issue with that. In this country, you've got to go and do a secular marriage, go to city hall or wherever, and then you do the religious marriage afterwards, which is your choice.
So shouldn't the secular marriage there shouldn't be an issue between same-sex marriage if it's secular?
If it's secular, the only issue I'm talking about is that what it reflects, the bigger picture of what it reflects in society. In other words, legally, you're right, but as a reflection of society, family values, etc., etc., you know, is it meant to be Adam and Eve, or somebody wants to put it to me, or Adam and Steve? And that's the big question, right? And that's a question. And certainly according to a religious perspective, the answer is clearly, it's not meant to be Adam and Steve. Okay, for a lot of reasons. I mean, we can get into a whole debate over here, but as I said, this is not for this topic, but I think the issues that we're talking about are kind of interesting, relevant to that very, very modern application. All right, that's all I'm trying to say, and I don't want to get shot down. You may call me a religious bigot. You can call me whatever you want. I don't care, because you know the reality is that it worries me that the society we're creating for our children and grandchildren, or which is being created around us, is going to become more and more difficult to live in because the family unit is being attacked, if not destroyed. Once the family unit goes away, then you get a lot of problems, you get a lot of crime, you get a lot of fallout because there's less control in society. Religion is a controlling factor, that's disappearing. Family is a controlling factor, that's also disappearing. So the society, by definition, will become more uncontrollable. How does that express itself? In all different ways, right? That there's more resources, you'll need more police, you'll need more people to make sure that it'll be safe to go out in the streets at night, right? What is stopping? I mean, you have these guys running around molesting women the whole time now, you know, you never get away from it. Did we always have it? The answer is yeah, but has it got worse? I think you have to say maybe the answer is yes, it has got worse.
Do you think that's directly correlated to...
That's a good question. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'd have to do research to be able to answer that with some sort of sense of correctness. But my feeling, my gut feeling is probably. It's my gut feeling. I'm not sure. It'd be interesting to find out statistics and see which way the wind is blowing in that direction. I really don't know. It's just thoughts that I'm sharing with you as I'm reading this, because it came when I was preparing this. This was what was sort of sticking in my mind. And you can absolutely disagree with what I'm saying. I don't want to get too much involved in the modern situation, except to say that there's like echoes from the past over here, which, you know, do resound. Sarah, yeah.
Great. I just wanted to say that a lot of the statements that people make, like that it leads to degradation of culture and society, were made when like black and white people wanted to get married.
Yeah, it's true. And that was also, at that time, right, scandalous what was going on in terms of the way the society viewed, you know, different racial groups or whatever it may be.
So for that reason, I'm a lot less likely to like hold stock in that sort of...
I hear you. I do hear you. And I don't disagree with you. But, you know, it may be required if we would develop this to make what we call in Gemara terms nafgaminas, differences between the two situations, and there may be distinctions which we can make. I don't want to go there now because it's not really what we're talking about here, but it's just an interesting extension of what we're talking about from a very old perspective to a very modern perspective. Alright, that's all I wanted to say.
I mean, it's still that, whatever
you do. Yeah. But this world that we're being described here is quite scary. In Israel, to have a society which is going like this in Eretz Yisrael so soon after Matan Torah, a couple of hundred years, that's already frightening. All right? Jewish values were very strong. And how it got to this level of lack of values and lack of respect. In the end of the day, it's about respecting each other, about respecting the person for who he or she is. If you're going to prepare to go and intimidate and attack that person, you don't respect that person's autonomy, you don't respect that person's existence. Okay, I mean, there's a lot to say about that. Listen to this. The Barbanel is the guy who really sums up the feelings about the Ramban, which we all kind of experienced when we heard what he said. Particularly, I was not comfortable, I had to share it with you, his halachic approach. Listen to this. Amarnu, this is number 3 on the right hand side. Amarnu Shah Ramban Meniya, the Ramban assumes, it's not as bad as Sodom. That's what we said according to the Ramban. And Shay Sodom Ayuraim Vachatim Klape Briot. Sodom were bad to everybody. The only problem with the people of Binyamin is that they were immoral. They weren't attacking everybody just for the sake of attacking them. They suffered from a terrible dose of immorality. That was the limit of their sin. In other words, Sodom was worse. That's the Ramban suggestion. So the Kedas Yitzchak mentioned before and the Abarbanel reject the Ramban completely. The Da'atam, their opinion, this is absolutely the same. The people of Binyamin and the people of Sodom, you could compare them absolutely 100%. Yerchiku et orchim migvulam. They both wanted to keep the guests away. Lo yerchiku biyad oni v'evyon. And they did not want to support anyone who is poor. And chesed. V'lo od. And ashahu mitalalim bezarim. V'tovim otam lemasei zima. Anyone who arrived, who was not wanted, they abused physically. Kedei shelo ya'iz adam lidrosh machseh b'nem. Nobody would then want to go and be with them. U'bezeh avchu masoret achnasat orchim al pia. And by doing that, they turned the whole tradition of hospitality on its head, literally. Al davar zeh morim hamikraot. These psukim teach us she'achein lo yu nohagim orchim kibnei Avram. And the people of Pelegesh Begivah, that story, did not behave like the sons of Abraham. She'arei omata ish alevi u'pilakshov v'naro b'rechovayim. As we mentioned, all these people were in the street. Ve'ein ish masefotam abayta. Nobody took them in. Va'af midivrei alevi ala el hazaken nishmat nimat achzava min uvda. Remember, we mentioned they were so disappointed that nobody took them in. What sort of Jewish town is this where nobody offers hospitality? And this was a point. Something which was not expected in a Jewish place. You know, you come to a Jewish place, you expect a certain standard of chesed with Bnei Avram. Umashe katav Ramban shepilegesh haitav lo yishidish dan din ze machloket ushanui bein rishonim. And the Ramban's excuse that she is not married and therefore was not such a terrible sin is something which the rabbis disagree. The Ramban has got his point of view as always, and the other rabbis have their point of view. So what we're saying is that even that argument of the Ramban to say that Binyamin wasn't so bad is not such a convincing argument. Go to the last column, third line down. Vayayim bepirush Ria Barbanel, shemityaches l'chol divrayim Ramban, meshiv aleim. But the Barbanel attacks the Ramban. V'tochen devaravim, what he says is like this. Shivtei Yisrael b'mitzpah, the tribes, pa'alu b'oto ma'amad, ka'am echad tachat hanaga achad. When they attacked Binyamin, they were working together as a unit. V'achlatoteihem nasu ofi shel mitzvat melech. It was almost as if the king had commanded them to do it. They didn't have a king, but it was like being commanded by a king. Shehi chala et kol ha'am nishvatav, which applied to all the people. Ma'amad miyuchad zeh v'yam makom od larutz ledin ha'shevet af ha'pi she'mitzvah kol shevet ladun et shivto. At that point it became a national problem. So you can't ask the tribe to judge its own. It's got to be the whole nation. Once they made it into a national problem, they had to deal with it. Ein zot amerit she'ein achrayut ha'prat chala kol ha'am nishvatav. Doesn't mean that people are not responsible individually. Chamur haya chet mzazeh mitzad atzmo. The reality is that the sin of Pelegesh Begivah in a way is worse, says the Abarbanel. V'chamur haya mitzad totzotav harsaniyot l'chever biklal. And it was a terrible conclusion for the whole society. Hareu nogea l'chayem shekol toshvei ha'aretz kula. It affected all the people living in Eretz Yisrael. So the Abarbanel says that in reality, this is the way I personally feel about the whole story, is that Binyamin is worse. It's always the example that he should have known better. She should have known better. This is a society that should have known better. Sodom, our expectation of Sodom is very minimal. Because where would they have known better? All they knew was they lived in a very rich place. They lived in a nice house in a beautiful, beautiful surrounding. So, you know, what's going to change for them? Nothing. Why would they know any better than to protect what they had? When it comes to Binyamin, wow, they should have known better. They should have not have behaved. They were Bnei Avram. They are the sons of Abraham. They're Jews. And as Jews, they're expected to have a higher standard of morality. So when they fall down in such a way, you know, it makes it a lot worse. And this to me is exactly, again, a modern application. This to me is exactly why the world judges Israel on a different standard, essentially, to everywhere else. The Israeli army is judged on a different standard. Which army in the world, before it attacks terrorists, sends messages by voicemail and drops messages from airplanes to tell the people who are not terrorists, get out of the building? They, in Gaza, they gave people like half an hour warning. get out of the building because we're going to attack, because they're terrorists here. And we know they're there, and they're using you as a shield. Get out. And which army in the world does that? But you read, and you still read the comments about the Israeli army, which are so negative, because the world has a kind of standard expectation from, you know, because they expect Jews to behave differently. And if Jews have to fight, they don't like it. They don't like Jews being aggressive. They like Jews being oppressed, because that's the history of the Jewish people 2,000 years. Christianity was very comfortable with that till very recently. And the Catholic Church saw it as a rejection. The Jews rejected Jesus. That's why they're being oppressed. That's the way they explained it. Comes along the State of Israel and it turns the whole thing upside down. And all of a sudden the Catholics have to come into reality that what they did for 2,000 years against Am Yisrael was disgusting. The Spanish Inquisition was a disgrace. The Crusades were an abomination. We go through the Sephira, it's all about the Crusades. All the literature that we read on the Sefirot HaOmer, a lot of it comes from that period when the Crusaders went through the countryside of France and Germany, and any Jewish community they found, they just wiped out in the most cruel way possible. You can't imagine. And this is the world that, you know, we were living in. So it's interesting that in the world today, the expectation has turned around. Instead of us being David and they're Goliath, all of a sudden we've become Goliath for some reason. And therefore, we're expected to behave, you know, we're not expected to do these nasty things. And thank God Israel does it. Israel has to do what it has to do. It doesn't enjoy doing it. It doesn't revel in it. But it has to do what it has to do to protect the country. And that's something we should never forget. Or I'm getting a bit political, I apologize. It's towards the end, also my voice, so, you know, it's got me politicized today. But I can't help it. I think we have to realize this. We're not going to always excuse what Israel does, because sometimes they may do things which we disagree with. I'm not going to say it never happens. But as a policy of condemnation against Israel, no. And, you know, you see these demonstrations occasionally in New York, be it at the UN or wherever, and we have to know where we stand. We have to understand that sometimes it's not about Israel, it's about Jews. It's a statement against, you know, it's good old anti-Semitism coming back again, full force. Look what's going on in France and other places in Europe, and you begin to understand it's not easy. I want to read the last paragraph and then we're done. Umikol makom, b'davar echad chazakim aleinu divrei Ramban, lo kol anshei giva hayu anshei Belial, and anshim mispar mitoshvei hayah. The Ramban's argument is it wasn't the whole city of Giva which were bad. It was a few bad apples. So the argument to say that it was worse than Sodom, says the Ramban, no. It was a few. Sodom was many. Abarbanel says, yeah, it was a few, but you know what? The other people should have stopped it. This is again back to what we said before. If you see something going on and you're in the tribe and you're able to do something about it, these, you know, stop these men attacking these innocent strangers, and you just sit by, you shut your door, you don't do anything about it, then you know what? You're to blame as well. It's called in legal terms, you're aiding and abetting the crime. You're facilitating the crime to take place. So I leave you to decide. Is the Ramban correct? Is the Abarbanel correct? Is the truth maybe somewhere between the two? For what it's worth, I just personally feel that, you know, that Shmuel HaNavi did not write down the story because he liked to write down the story. It's a horrible story. It's really washing our dirty linen in public. But you know what? It's a powerful story. It's a story to remind us that as Jews in a Jewish society, there's got to be not only halachic standards, as they say, you know, some standards of legal standards, but there's also got to be moral standards as well. This is a big deal in Israel today. It's a very serious discussion all the time about the morality of the society. All right? And you hear discussions about this, and it comes up in elections, and it comes up all the time. And it's not about religion. Unfortunately, too much morality gets bound up with religious life. And all of a sudden, who seem to be the most moral people? The religious people. And we know that very often the religious people are not the most moral people. We see that. We see the way they behave. We see the way that they attack other people unnecessarily. So there's got to be a bigger picture about this. Right? Religious life should lead to a higher awareness of morality. It doesn't always happen. And I think this Pelegesh B'Givah is a real challenge Shmuel HaNavi is putting this story here to challenge us and to say that whenever we're in a position where we create a Jewish society in Israel, regardless of whether it's religious or secular or whatever, the bottom line is that morality has to be really one of the highest issues on the agenda. Alright? Also, spirituality. Pesach Micha is a warning. Don't let that get out of control. But morality, the way that we conduct ourselves between man and man, we care for each other, chesed, we worry about the other person, not just about ourselves, that is the foundation, is the bottom line of the Jewish world. And I'll just finish with this one thought, because it's something I remember hearing years ago. In the Torah, you'll find that there's no mitzvah chesed. There are mitzvahs connected with chesed, but there's no actual commandment, do chesed. It's mentioned in the Novi, it's mentioned in the prophets, but it's not in the Torah. It's not a mitzvah to get up in the morning and do chesed. It doesn't say anything like that. And the question is why? And the Musiniks, the very great rabbis in Lithuania, they put it very simply. They said that is like the foundation of Judaism. You don't have to legislate foundations. Foundations have to be there which you build the religion. If you haven't got chesed in your society as Jews, then you're missing the whole point of what it means to be Jewish. If you're not caring about the other person, you're not worrying about the other individual, be they Jewish or not Jewish, right? And that's really important. We have an obligation to worry about other people as well. We prioritize. We worry about Jewish people first. That's what we have to do. That's what we're commanded to do. Aniyei erecha kodmim. The people in your city come first. But we do have to worry. We do have to make an impression on the world. If we can do that and we understand chesed, then the story of Pelegesh B'Givah has made an impression on us. All right. Any comments about that? Do you think I was being too political, too extreme? Nobody walked out. I'm very impressed. Had I given this lecture in Columbia University, I think most of the class would have walked out. For the simple reason, they would have thought the professor's gone completely out of his mind. You know, talking this right-wing Republican nonsense. I'm not Republican, I'm not Democrat, I'm not anything, because I'm not born and bred here, so I'm not even sure what it all means. But I think that there's a lot of application in it. It's an incredible story. Never, ever really looked at in detail. I'm really excited. This year was on the first time I didn't have to rush it. We actually spent two lessons on, to me, one of the great, red flags of the Bible. It's waving at us. The red flag is waving. And it's saying, learn this story. I know it's not pleasant. It's really, really not a nice story. You don't want to talk about it in mixed company. You really don't. But you know what? It's got a moral. It's got a powerful message. Society has got to be a caring society. Alright, I think I've preached enough for today. Ouch. Everybody have a great day, have a great Shabbos. Next Tuesday, don't forget, review, please bring the review sheet. And yeah, if you have questions, whatever it may be.